Hello, one and all, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. I'm John Arola. It's Thursday, which means you don't know who our co-host's gonna be. But it is actually someone that you might have seen before, appearing recently with Francesca Fiorentini. Carolyn Johnson, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be here again.
Glad to have you here again for the first time when I'm actually here. I was on vacation at that point. You had an awesome show with Francesca. But actually, people might well know you for your work at TYT outside of the Damage Report as well. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a contributor for Rebel HQ, where I've been making some really incredible videos just about a lot of topics I wouldn't normally cover. I'm an organizer in Los Angeles, so usually I'm focused on sort of hyper-local politics. So it's been really cool with the work at Rebel HQ, covering things from, you know, the daily Trump drama. Yesterday I was working on a story about Ivanka and the World Bank and all this stuff. So it's been a lot of fun.
Story.
And yeah, you know, a lot of laughs along the way for sure.
Yeah, the fate of the World Bank is hilarious. Mm-hmm. No, but I totally agree. That's been my defense mechanism for literally years here. But anyway, we're gonna have some fun too, as we talk about such lighthearted, comical topics like Kyrsten Sinema spitting in our face. Now internationally though, so that'll be fun. We've got the latest on the investigation into January 6th, who will be complying with requests to testify and who will not, what will the legal consequences be for those who don't. There's a new golden calf that the right is worshiping. We're gonna have that for you as well. And the headline story for the stream is Trump's call for MAGA to no longer vote. I love it. I want to publicize it as much as possible. So we're going to be talking about that too. And then we got Nazis and we got all sorts of fun stuff. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, what was she actually like on certain topics? We're going to jump into that as well. And if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream so that people know we're live, that would be great, by the way. With all that said, Caroline, you ready to talk about some news?
Oh yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let's jump directly into it. Kyrsten Sinema wants you to believe that she is operating in good faith during the ongoing negotiations around the reconciliation infrastructure bill. That said, she did leave a little bit over a week ago during the negotiations to go home to Arizona for a very necessary foot doctor's appointment. You know that it's necessary because she waited at least 72 hours between it and running a marathon. So that's good. It must have been serious. And of course, as we reported at the time, she was really there for fundraisers. She was raising a bunch of money. And look, I think for a lot of people, when we're in hard times, we have been for some time, you know, pre-pandemic and certainly exacerbated by the pandemic, we need this bill for a million different reasons. And so her choosing to not be engaged with it and instead go to Arizona to fundraise seemed like the ultimate insult. But I want to reassure you, it very much was not, because now she's gone to Europe to fundraise and I feel like that's worse. So I feel a little bit better about the whole Arizona thing. She's spending a week in Europe and I would love to tell you exactly where, but like, what do you expect, accountability from a United States senator? She's just off. She's eating, loving and praying or whatever. I don't know what order, but she is finding herself and hopefully her state will find a new senator at some point. But anyway, she took part in fundraising efforts for the DSCC. This is according to a spokesman for the Arizona Democrat, because of course she ain't talking to reporters. One of the fundraisers she's done occurred in Paris, and Sinema was also reportedly planning meetings in London. I don't know, maybe Zurich is coming up. It's basically like the plot of a Bourne movie. I don't know where she's going, but it's gonna be somewhere exciting in Europe. But anyway, Caroline, I wanted to get your view on this. Sinema sure seems to have a lot of time recently.
Yeah, I know, she should be pretty busy, but who can blame anyone for going on a trip to Europe, still in a pandemic, you know, all that good stuff. Yep. But yeah, I could talk about just the persona of Kyrsten Sinema all day.
I want you to.
Her great, because her brand of just being this like elusive, quirky, above it all lawmaker who just like isn't beholden to anyone, whatever, and all the you know, recently the media coverage has changed, but for so long it was just like, she doesn't answer to anyone and that's cool. But it's like, it's so exactly. It's so offensive. Like, her job, the legislation she works on every day affects people's lives. Like, people's lives are literally at stake with what she works on. So this like being coy and quirky is so offensive, and there's no justification for it. I really, you know, I have no patience for someone who is a public servant trying to make this brand for herself. I don't understand it. And I don't know if you saw, there was a photo on social media that went around recently that she was at a Bernie rally, I think in 2016 before, or maybe it was earlier than that, before she was a senator. And it's crazy. And the Daily Beast notes, like, she's totally unrecognizable from that sort of, you know, not me, us feeling. And it's crazy. Like, we all know that money and power changes politicians, but to see it happen so quickly, I mean, this is her first term. Like, it's really shocking. And it's honestly just, it's a great example for everyone to see how quickly politicians can be corrupted by just like money and power. It's really, I'm not into it. But
wait, hold on, Carolyn. No, you mentioned being corrupted by money and power. No. She's just quirky and she marches to the beat of her own drum. Why are you implying that there's anything else going on?
No,
we just say things like she doesn't answer to anyone. That's a fun thing to say. It's less fun when, like, one commentator will be like, well, shouldn't she? She's a representative after all. And it's even less fun to be like, well, actually she does answer to people. It just ain't the voters or the volunteers who got her elected. None of that's fun, Caroline. Come on, let's be fun.
Yeah, and you know, I will say it was so fun when she just like gave her thumbs down to—
That was fun.
Was that like expanding Medicare? It was—
No, that was for $15 an hour minimum
wage. Oh, right. Even funnier. Yeah. I can't stop laughing, actually.
So fun. Can I just, before we're gonna move on to more about Europe and how her friends are aghast at her. Can I just briefly mention, there's all these articles about how witty and clever and anachronistic she is, which is fine. If you think something she says is witty, I think that that's a little bit sad, but you know, comedy is an individual thing. You can do that if you want. But there's also another thread that's been all over the place, which is like, oh no, leftists and progressives are realizing that, like, they loved her quirkiness and her Uggs and her purple hair. And now it turns out that she's not everything they thought just because she's bisexual or insert whatever quirky thing they say is quirky about her. Really fast fact check. Was there ever a time where leftists were like, I just love that she's quirky? I like the purple outfits. I like that she doesn't give an F. Who was saying that? Maybe. I mean, I'm sure at some point, if you go back when she got elected, I probably said something about like, hey, good. Openly bisexual person gets elected to the Senate. That's representation. I didn't say, and so I'm good for the next 6 years. Who was actually saying that?
Yeah, I think like right when she got elected, it was so galvanizing, just because I believe she turned that seat from red to blue. And so, you know, it was kind of like, okay, whatever, like, you dress crazy, you know, wear funny glasses and stuff, that's great. We love you. We're just so happy right now. And then she kind of stuck with that part of it, and then maybe got confused. Maybe she thought that's why people elected her. You know, it's hard. It's a tough job.
It's tough to read such a big room. But anyway, we gave you sort of the bare minimum details about what she's doing on this Europe trip. And normally when I do that, it's laziness. But no, in this case, it's because I don't know anything else. Her office has declined to say how long she would be abroad, what countries she would visit, how the trip was being paid for, whether she had done any additional fundraising for her own campaign. Her political team had reached out to set up those meetings in London and Paris. We found out from other people, but from her team, why would you think you get to know whether she's ever coming back? She could literally just stay there for the rest of her life. You wouldn't know. That's quirky. I just moved to Norway, you know? Why would you get to know who's paying for what? Why would you get to know what cities she's gonna be in Why would you, you think you live in like a representative democracy, you big dummy. Why would you get to know any of that stuff? You're not quirky. That's what's bad about you, audience. You're not quirky enough. But anyway, her team reassures us that she's still talking on the phone with President Biden. And I'm sure the conversations are riveting. Now, bad news for Kyrsten Sinema, which is my favorite type of news recently, which is that new polls show that she is not just in hypothetical, a little bit of worries about a possible primary, like some people are curious about seeing some options. New poll shows that when matched up against some likely, or at the very least, very possible options, she's not doing too well. So there's this Data for Progress poll conducted from October 8th to 10th. Some of the past polling about a primary challenge to Sinema was from like way back in June and July. This is much more recent. So likely Democratic voters in Arizona were tested with hypothetical matchups of Sinema versus four other potential challengers. One is Representative Ruben Gallego, Phoenix Mayor Kay Gallego, Representative Greg Stanton, Tucson Mayor Regina Romero. In a five-way race, Ruben would actually beat Sinema 23% to 19%, beating the sitting senator. That is just amazing. And by the way, it's accompanied with a massive fall in her favorability among prospective primary voters. She's at 24%. Disapprovals at 70%. And by the way, like it's not just like, duh, Democratic Party sucks. That's what it should be. But no, they can distinguish between different people. Because when you look at the other Democratic senator in the same state, Mark Kelly, 85% of potential primary voters have a favorable view of him. And all he's done so far is not try to tank the infrastructure bill. That's all it takes. The difference between 85 and 24. What do you think, Caroline?
That I just, you know, it just is repeating what we've been saying about, you know, a lot of Democratic voters are not just voting for quirk and other fun things. Like, and it just continues to shock me as I think about just how quickly this descent happened. I mean, it's almost nice in a way, because you know, with most smarter and more shrewd politicians, I feel like they have like a more gradual descent into this sort of like corporate being held to corporations and corporate lobbyists and things like that. So I definitely applaud the challengers. I'm not sure if they are, have they actually like publicly said that they're challenging. These are just like
it's hypotheticals. Gallego has, I believe, tweeted some pretty like confrontational things that sort of imply maybe, but no, I don't believe that anyone's declared or anything like that.
Yeah, well, I guess yeah, that's to say I think there's still time for her to sort of like buck up and get back into people's good graces. Although I don't know, it feels a little too late. It feels, even if, you know, a miracle Hail Mary happens and this infrastructure bill, whatever, she's not tanking it. Even if that happens, I think this like cat and mouse game, the display of not being willing to meet with constituents, of only, you know, voicemail boxes, her voicemail box being full, like if that, that the damage is kind of already done. So hopefully, you know, at this point, it seems like a done deal. But even if she tries to go back and right her wrongs, it feels like just this whole process has been such a mess. And I really feel for the grassroots organizers on the ground in Arizona who so recently, again, got her elected, and this is how she repays them. It's really sad.
Yeah, 100%. And look, the thing about her that's so amazing isn't that she is representing corporate interests. It's kind of that she turned so hard in just a few years. I mean, she was in the Green Party like way back when. Like, it's amazing. But that's not even the most amazing thing. It's that she is not doing the bare minimum to save her reputation. Like, she is continually spitting in the faces of the voters. Like, it feels almost like this is not what is happening. I don't actually believe this. But if she was being controlled behind the scenes or blackmailed or whatever, she'd do everything that they want. But like, she wants to warn us. So she spits in our face and she thumbs down and makes it clear that this is not in the interest of her voters. That's not what's happening. But But I love that she doesn't have the self-preservation instincts, because a lot of them do. A lot of them are just as conservative on many issues, but they sort of hide it. They don't make the story about themselves. That's how they retain their office. And she is just, she apparently believes that you can survive in politics doing this. And I can't wait to test that theory.
Or just really quickly, that you just got me thinking, like, we should ask her, like, blink twice if you are, you know, you've been kidnapped, if there's something going on, because you're right. Like, there's no, it makes no sense to, like, both tank your public persona and your political, like, obligations. I don't know. There's, I might be on the conspiracy theory train with this one.
That's fine. We've all been driven crazy by last year. There's a lot of people who are frustrated with Kyrsten Sinema, and it's not just her voters and everyone. Even people who know her well, who've been friends with her, are now talking to reporters saying, Jesus, what the hell is going on? There's this article on the Daily Beast, Kyrsten Sinema is unfriending her network into oblivion. She doesn't have time on social media for the friends. She's just liking those posts from wine moms on Instagram or whatever. I love it. Those go around constantly. Anyway, there's some sources who talked to the Daily Beast about this. And one, Chris Hurstam said, when I talked to other individuals that consider themselves friends of her, they told me they haven't spoke to her in over a year. And when they've contacted her to inquire why she's doing what she's doing politically, they don't get callbacks. She's clearly gone in a different direction. Used to be part of Sinema's local fundraising network. That individual hasn't talked to her in forever. Matt Grodsky says a lot of people who've considered her a friend or confidant or someone she'd go to for donor support or political support, she won't talk to those people anymore. She had a big network of people who liked her, establishment Democrats, progressives, everyone marveled at her ability to win in Arizona. A lot of her longtime friends and confidants are no longer there. No one knows, to be honest, where she's at. And another source said, allies in the party for her don't exist anymore. She's burned so many bridges with the allies she used to have. And so my question for you, Caroline, is if she's going to get back her groove or mojo or whatever, how can she do it? And if she doesn't, let's say that we continue on the way we are, maybe the bill passes, maybe it doesn't, but she certainly didn't help. It's one thing to speculate about, like, some congressman running against her. What do you think, like, Schumer will do? What do you think Biden will do? Will there be organized Democratic support for a challenger after all that she's done this past year or not done?
That's a really, really good question that I hadn't considered. Like, yeah, what is the when someone who is ostensibly until now an establishment Democrat doesn't go with what the establishment wants. Yeah, what is the response from Democratic leaders? That's the big question, because as we know, challengers, especially progressive left-leaning challengers to incumbent Democrats, are very not given any support. Nancy Pelosi, as we know, in the House has, like, specifically said that we are not giving any support to progressive challengers. So I don't know. I just keep coming back to the idea that, Joe Biden, one of the biggest rallying cries of his campaign to get sort of the progressive vote was that, look, I can get these sort of middle of the road Democrats on board with certain legislations. Bernie can't, Elizabeth Warren can't, that sort of thing. And, like, you know, that's a very good point, but we're seeing that, the hallmark of the Biden campaign is just sort of crumbling before our eyes. And obviously that is definitely to be expected, but there's something also very different between the Manchin of it all and the Sinema of it all. Like, Joe Manchin is, giving statements and saying, well, this is how I work. This is what I believe, sort of. This is allegedly what my constituents want. But Sinema's just, like, radio silence is so different. So I wouldn't be surprised if Biden and Schumer, hold back from really defending her should she be primaried in 2024.
I can't wait to see.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
Fingers crossed.
No, it's a great point about Biden. That was supposed to be, well, there was two advantages he was supposed to have. Supposedly he's more electable, which makes honestly perfect sense as long as you never looked at any of the comparative polls of like Bernie versus Trump or anything like that in 2016 or 2020. Mm-hmm. And also that he could bring people together. Well, so far with the Republicans, how's that working out? Has he brought Republicans together? And then on bringing like the Democratic Party together, like she might end up supporting the bill, maybe, but it's going to have been like eviscerated. Mm-hmm. What, Bernie couldn't have gotten her to cut a bill by a ton and then reluctantly support it? Where is the Biden advantage that we were supposed to have? So far, I'm really not seeing it. And during all of this time, he's being like super cowardly in terms of executive orders, executive action. He's not moving on those things too. So what was the advantage here?
Exactly.
I mean, we're not surprised. We knew this coming in, but yeah.
Very, anyway. It's disappointing. Yeah, so.
100%. Well, no, final thought?
I was just gonna say, I mean, you know, we keep hearing that there's like, she's having all these calls with the president. And it's like, okay, Joe, but like, tell us what she's saying, the good, the bad, like, what's going on? Why, you know, because he likely has some sort of good excuse of like why she is not budging. And I just say, like, burn it all down, like, let us know. It's not helping you or your or Biden's reelection if he can't wrangle this area of the party.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will also say this is like, I guess, a prediction or a warning for people who are watching the show now but haven't been following American politics for very long. There has been almost nothing done throughout this year. They passed the COVID bill, there was a hate crimes bill, and now we've been waiting for months and months and months for infrastructure. And this is during the honeymoon period. Like, if you think nothing was done this year, next year's an election, which is the ultimate excuse from every politician to not do a damn thing. So enjoy that. And then eventually he'll be a lame duck. So just enjoy. This was the exciting part of the Biden term.
Yeah, we're basically on to the next election already, and you'll love to see it.
Yeah, well, we'll be talking about that in just a few. For now, though, we are going to go to our first break, but we'll be back in just a few with January 6th. And the new thing the right wing is worshiping after this. Okay, everyone, hold on to your butts. We're about to show you some video that is a little bit rough, but here we go. Video that you just saw is newly released. It of course happened on January 6th. And what you're seeing is Officer Michael Fanone, who testified a few months ago, being dragged into a crowd. And he's being dragged by a man, Albuquerque Cosper Head, who allegedly bear hugged him, told him that he's gonna help him, he's gonna get him out of there. And then he pulled him away from the other cops so that the crowd could do blank. You insert into that whatever you want. It certainly wasn't helping Officer Michael Fanone. And that sort of video is a reminder of how bad January 6th was. It was terrible, should have never happened. And it did happen. And there's still a lot that we don't know about it. And so thankfully, there is an investigation. They're trying to get answers, but that does not mean they're gonna be able to do so if some of the people who might have helped to plan this might know what the president was thinking about it, refused to comply with a request to testify. And we have a big name for you in that area. Steve Bannon's lawyer just yesterday wrote a letter to the panel saying that his client will not provide testimony or documents until the committee reaches an agreement with former President Donald Trump over executive privilege or a court weighs in on the matter. Quote, that is an issue between the committee and President Trump's counsel, and Mr. Bannon is not required to respond at this time. So earlier this month, they wrote another letter. They're big letter people. I like that. Bannon's attorney argued that the executive privileges belong to President Trump and we must accept his direction and honor his invocation of executive privilege. The claim that Bannon could be covered by the former president's privilege is unusual though, because Bannon wasn't working for the federal government during the period surrounding the January 6th insurrection. And privilege claims normally only apply to close officials around the president and deliberations between government employees. So not only was he not working there, he was fired 4 years ago. So it's weird that he like remains this confident after he was yeeted out of the White House. But like, you can't just executive privilege everybody. The dude bear hugging Fanon doesn't get to claim executive privilege. That's not how this is supposed to work, Caroline. What do you think?
I just want to say I love this look into their friendship. I love how Bannon is like, that's private. Like, he's my best friend. You can't go there. That is between us. And as you said, like, they're letter writing people. It's very cute. It's such a shame that, you know, it just, the topic has to be about an insurrection on the United States, because other than that, I think they have a really wonderful, loving relationship. But yeah, this whole January 6th thing is—it's just getting in the way of their bromance. And you know, he really should just testify so they can leave it behind them and, you know, be in prison together as best friends. That's really all.
Yeah, and look, if they were trying to get me to come in, I'd probably be frustrated about it too. Thankfully, I don't have any behind the scenes information about the planning of it. Is that something I have in common with Bannon? I don't know. He's acting like we don't. Because if he didn't know anything about this, it might be inconvenient to be brought in to testify. He might feel like if he's seen to be complying with their requests, MAGA world might not like that. So I want to be clear, him having secret information is not the only plausible explanation for why he wouldn't comply. But as you'll see in just a little bit, there is reason to believe that he might have some behind the scenes information. In any event, those organizing this are not that shocked that he's not complying, and apparently they're gonna do something about it, they say at least. If Bannon is a no-show, the committee is expected to immediately begin seeking a referral for criminal contempt after the subpoena deadline passes, which I believe is today actually. Essentially making an example of him for the non-compliance. It might take some time, by the way, before the House sends such a referral to the DOJ, but they could begin the process actually later on today. And so it's possible that we might know. My question for you, Caroline, though, is I would say pessimistic about any legal consequences for virtually anyone. Not to say there hasn't been some people involved with Trump over the past 4 years have spent a little bit of time in prison for the things they did. Far more haven't, though. So if you were Steve Bannon, how worried would you be right now?
Oh God, another great question. Because I definitely believe that there is a real belief among Trump's members of Trump's circle while he was president that really have this sort of like narcissistic delusion that nothing of substance can happen to them. And I think you see this really interesting split within the former Trump world of like, there's the Stephanie Grishams and Michael Cohens who are kind of like, I didn't know what I was doing. They're horrible. They were brainwashing me, blah, 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 blah. I love liberals now. And then the other side is like, oh no, like I have never said an ill word in my life. You are a liar. You are the one, you know, you have skeletons in your closet. The election was rigged, blah, blah, blah. Like it's really insane that there are these, it's a huge split. So something is definitely going on in this world where people are realizing, individuals in that orbit are realizing that there's only you know, the road is split before you. Either you double down on apologizing and saying, it wasn't me, we were corrupt by power, or you just have to keep going. And I think the second lane, if you will, is just getting narrower and narrower, and people are dropping off as these consequences become so dramatic. And you know, back in even in 2016, I don't think anyone would be surprised to know that in a couple years, yeah, Steve Bannon is still right by the president, is still the former president is still sticking with him despite all of the insanity that's happened.
Yeah.
So I think that takes a level of deluding yourself. And I think if anyone's done it, it's obviously Steve Bannon, who, you know, largely some sort of outsider, I guess, but it's a fascinating.
It seemed like it for a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
And no, he's apparently got some access. Trump seems to have forgiven him in some ways. The base seems to not care that he conned them out of millions of dollars to build a wall, and they just bought yachts with it, and nobody even remembers that anymore.
Well, they had a falling out, right? Like something, am I wrong in that there was something that happened between the two of them that, or have they always been good? Have they always, like Trump and Bannon, been like pretty much side by side?
Look, it's a thing that happens to a lot of groups. They were spending a lot of time together in the White House, and everybody wants to be the one hot person in the group, and so they're naturally gonna clash or whatever. But really fast, I do wanna let you know though about some of the reason to believe that he might know at least something that the committee would want to hear. On the eve of the riot, Steve Bannon warned on his podcast, the day before, all hell is going to break loose tomorrow. It's all converging, and now we're on the point of attack tomorrow. And all I can say is strap in, you have made this happen, and tomorrow it's game day. Which, look,
not suspicious at all.
You could just describe, we're gonna have a lot of people there, there's gonna be signs, we're gonna sell corn dogs, and we're gonna have our voices be heard, and we're not breaking any windows. You could be describing that, but it's a better description of what ended up actually happening. So anyway, and by the way, Robert Costa of the Washington Post says Bannon has actually been in close touch with President Trump for days before January 6th, based on a reporting, he privately told President Trump to have a reckoning on January 6th. And he said to the president, it's time to kill the Biden presidency in the crib. Which is just a great metaphor for one pro-life guy to say to the other pro-life guy. But anyway, that none of this is proof that he knew anything, but maybe he did. Final thoughts?
Just a little. No, that podcast statement is wild because I remember that day before they breached the security, before they got into any of the buildings, just kind of being like, oh, this is a protest, which, you know, is allowed. And that even when it started to go wrong at the beginning, there was just such chaos and confusion that I was just like, okay, again, like, yeah, these people are not my people, but like they are allowed to do what they're doing. So yeah, what you're saying about the fact that had Bannon not given this like explicit detail using literal like language of war and attacks and that kind of thing, it has to show that they knew that something was going on. And like you said earlier, what to me the whole January 6th thing that is so unfortunate is that because of all of these issues around who is telling the truth, who we're gonna have testify and not testify, it seems like we're never going to actually be able to investigate the real things that need to be investigated, including like, how did they breach the security of the Capitol? But it just feels like we can't even get there because I mean, people don't even accept that Biden is the president of the United States. Like if you don't accept that logic as a grounding, like we're never gonna get to the more serious things that really do need to be investigated. And all of this evidence comes out, just keep proving further and further that there is fire where there's all this smoke.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that they're ever gonna find anything, but if they do, I hope that they hurry up so that they can finalize their report before the next insurrection.
Yeah, right.
And by the way, based on his podcast comment, I love how adaptive the crowd that showed up is. So the night before, get in there, point of attack, game day, get them, it's awesome. Then they do it, and the right's like, this might go poorly. That's Antifa. And then a couple of months later, oh, we haven't been like illegitimized in politics, we can keep doing this. They're us again, they're patriots. It's like it really does depend on when. Political prisoners, why are you persecuting them? But I thought they were Antifa.
I also want to invite Kim from Chesapeake. She's carrying an American flag that was carried at the peaceful rally with Donald J. Trump on January 6th. I ask you all to rise and join us as Mark Lloyd leads us in the pledge.
Face the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag.
What is going on? So that was a rally in support of Glenn Youngkin, who is running in Virginia for the governor's seat as a Republican. Now, to be fair, Glenn Youngkin was not there, and afterward probably thought that was a good call that I made, because they are pledging allegiance specifically to a flag because it was at the Capitol on January 6th. Politics is really weird, Caroline. There's a lot of stuff that's very weird. That seems to me particularly weird. Why? Who cares that it was there? Except we know why they care that it was there. It's just so weird to like to turn to it and do the ritual thing because it was part of the insurrection.
So they, yeah, so the flag is there because it represents a symbol from a day in which the American right failed to acknowledge a legitimate election. And they're using this flag to support a man seeking election. Like, it's just like, why? I thought we were doing the whole we're not voting anymore thing. Like, it doesn't make sense. The symbol is of that, you know, you can't trust institutions, you can't trust Congress, you can't trust the United States government. And then it's like, oh, by the way, like, remember, donate to this like gubernatorial candidate on your way out. Like, yeah, very good move for him not to be there. Just so many mixed messages.
Oh, like, he's weird enough though too. He's weird.
Yeah, I don't know that much about him. He's
not as bad as Trump or whatever. But anyway, look, I'm glad we have that video. We finally, after years and years in America, we found the American idol. It's a false one, but we found it. Generally, false idols are false because you shouldn't worship them. This one, they're also being false about it. They know that it wasn't a peaceful protest. That's why they liked it. If it had been a peaceful protest, you wouldn't have heard a right winger talk about it for 8 months now. They wouldn't care. They loved that it was violent.
Which is really quickly, they're talking about the peaceful protest, and the sign in the background says that the governor can, the candidate is a Godzilla of truth. Did I read that right?
I love metaphors, but at a certain point, you're stretching. You're stretching. Like,
Oh my God.
Like, I want a reputation like as like a guy who gives good advice for stock trades. I want to be an alligator of finance. That's what I want. Mm-hmm. No, that like, do you even understand metaphors?
Right.
But anyway.
Pick an animal, pick a quality.
Yeah. Cool. I don't get it. Anyway, while Glenn Youngkin was not there, Trump did phone into the rally in support of him. And to give you an idea of, well, not that you need another idea of how crazy this rally was, they just worshiped an insurrection flag. So they got their Ashley Babbitt for their martyr. Now they have their flag. It's like how they said after the wall came down in Germany, everybody claimed to have a piece of it. And there were so many pieces that you could put together like three walls. Now they've got their flags. Everyone's going to be saying my flag was there. This one I beat a cop with. But anyway, so Trump did call in and said, Glenn Youngkin is a great gentleman. We won in 2016, we won in 2020, the most corrupt election in the history of our country. Probably one of the most corrupt anywhere, but we're gonna win it again. And so he wants Youngkin to win, even though Youngkin's got this weird back and forth thing where at one point they were calling him, like Seb Gorka called him a rhino because he wouldn't go on his show. And then now he's like MAGA loves him. Youngkin is calling for an audit of voting machines, which is already done, but he's like calling for it again because you're supposed to be freaked out about 2020. He admits that there was no significant fraud in past Virginia elections. He says he doesn't expect Democrats to cheat this fall, but you have to pretend to think that all elections are stolen anyway. And by the way, he has been changing. So originally, he didn't want to campaign with the state senator Amanda Chase, who's a big conspiracy theorist in the area, super supportive of the January 6th people, calling them patriots or whatever. Didn't want to be seen with her as recently as August. Now going to be campaigning with Chase in Martinsville and Chesterfield soon. So sorry, that was last week. So you do what you got to do to win. And on the right, they think it's I got to be with Trump. I got to be with the Trump people, which means whatever conspiracy theories he comes up with, whatever lies he pushes, that's my thing now. Anyway, any other thoughts?
I'm lost on if we're supposed to vote or not. If I'm a Republican, just am I supposed to vote or not? Like, Trump is saying one thing, this guy's saying another thing. I'm confused.
Yeah, well, we're gonna debate it. Don't you worry.
Great.
We're gonna try to figure out what are you supposed to do if you're a red hat wearer. Okay, everybody. So far, having a lot of fun with the show. Caroline, it's been a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for joining us and being such a, you know, such a big part of the network. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, love TYT.
Well, you're gonna love this then, because coming up right after our program in about 43 minutes, I know you know what I'm gonna say. Indisputable is coming up, and I know you're already hyped for it. I know that, but I'm gonna make you even more hyped. It's not just that you get Dr. Rashad Ritchie, that would be enough. But you know what else you get today? You get Senator Nina Turner on Indisputable. Oh my God. 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, 11:30 a.m. Pacific time. That is an exciting, like if you had told me a year ago, would I have believed you? I don't know, but I'm very excited about it now. Anyway, that's coming up. And also later on, you can double dip with Senator Nina Turner, two times the SNT, because tonight there's an all new Power Hour with Nina Turner. Members get the full episode live after the Young Turks at 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific time. If you'd like to get access to it, you can sign up to become a member today at tyt.com/join. But let's jump back into it. Donald Trump had an interesting bit of advice for his fans, and I have to say, I'm a fan of it, actually. He put out this statement saying, if we don't solve the presidential election fraud of 2020, which we have thoroughly and conclusively documented, Republicans will not be voting in 22 or 24. It is the single most important thing for Republicans to do. Now, you might recall, this is very similar to what he was saying after the November election, but before the Senate runoffs in Georgia. That worked out very well, just not for him or the Republican Party. So, Caroline, I have to say, I don't often come out of these Trump statements feeling hyped, but I like the direction he's turned in this time.
Yeah, this is a proven great strategy for, I'd say, just like the general well-being of the United States. Maybe he's just changing his tune. Maybe he knows this is what the country needs. But also, this statement is written like very confusingly, because it's like, it is the single most important thing for Republicans to do. But is he saying not voting is the most important thing? Or like, yeah, the way it's written, maybe he's saying if we don't solve it.
But it's just poorly written.
Right after the Republicans will not be voting. It is the single most like, oh God, I think they lost some of their editors or who knows. Maybe it's just him getting on. I don't know how he releases these statements anymore because he's banned from everywhere, but you can just picture him like hunching over, being like, nailed it. And it's totally, yeah. It's
sitting like a king on his squatty potty throne and giving us these nuggets. I wish I'd gone a different direction of political wisdom. But anyway, so yes, and you can always tell when he wrote the statement or not. Sometimes it'll have like complex multi-syllable words, and I'm like, you didn't write that. You got some college Republican intern. But anyway, this he definitely wrote. Now, there's two angles of this that I want to talk about. So one is if this will happen, I don't know that it's been conclusively proven. Like, I don't know how you would that his statements hurt turnout in Georgia, but the Democrats did win two Senate seats, and that's not typically a thing that happens in Georgia. So it is, I think, reasonable to assume that these close elections might have been thrown by not just him, but people like Lynn Wood and others going and saying, these elections are just stolen. You can't trust any of the machines. Why waste your time? Now, in this case, it's not an election that's 2 weeks away. He's talking about something in 22 and in 24. He might never say anything like this again. But do you think there's a possibility that he and others are training Republicans to not trust the system and kind of become apathetic about actually being an active part of it?
This is so muddy to me. I mean, yeah, I'm also just looking at the quote about having to, you know, saying that like voting isn't enough. Now you have to protect your vote. It's so interesting to me because that is, in a way, something that we say on the left all the time is like, not you have to protect your vote, but it's like we've learned voting isn't enough. You have to vote. And then typically on our side, it's like and canvas and donate and phone bank and all that good stuff. But I'm just so stricken by this this repeating of this language that I've heard and said so often, like voting isn't enough. But of course, in this case, I don't know what else to say. I don't know how you can continue to provide facts and evidence, and even people on the right and Republican leaders and even Republicans who have lost their elections or re-elections are saying like this isn't a problem. I just don't know what to do. I mean, and like Steve Scalise was on Fox News the other day refusing to concede that Biden fair and square won the election. And again, it's like these people, they're not just nobodies. Like he might very well be someday the House majority leader. And this is one of the cases that, you know, comes up so often with Trump and elections that I don't know what this will take as a country to recover from the damage that this rhetoric has been doing to our election systems. I really just don't know.
Yeah, they've turned in a very anti-democratic direction. Every election is fake and has been stolen. They were saying that about Gretchen Whitmer. They had to rally against her and they were like, no, she stole it in 2018. What are you talking about? But yeah, and look, it's not that this is totally new. Like you fall in a lot of elections. There's always some percentage of the losing side that says it was stolen regardless of the evidence or whatever. But I don't think I've ever seen it just be expected that, yeah, every politician on that side is also gonna say that it was stolen. And so I share your concern. Can you move away from that? Will 2028 be like just totally like, yeah, we give it our best shot, but we lost. I guess we'll see him in 4 years. I don't know. And people who study democracy and who especially study the fall of democracy, they say that it is this official unwillingness to comply with the results of elections that is most dangerous. It's not that people are mad, it's that their representatives, their leaders are going along with it because democracy is an unlikely thing. People being willing to let other people control what they do, knowing they're gonna do things they don't like, only works if you believe, well, I can get them next time. You know what? I lost this time, but I'll run again in 2024. They're convincing their fans next time is irrelevant. There ain't gonna be a next time. It's gonna be stolen just as bad as this time. So what's the alternative? If it's not a ballot, what is it? What do you take up? And we should also recognize, by the way, that while I'm being a little bit jokey about him telling them not to vote, there's a reason that he's doing that. And it isn't fundamentally about the base. Well, it is. But it's not just getting them not to vote. It's getting them to put pressure on Republican politicians to do X. And X can be suppressing the vote, auditing the ballots, doing all of the nonsense they're doing. Take control of the Secretary of State's office, take control of county elections boards. He wants them to be invested and involved in this process because this isn't about stopping a steal, it's setting up a steal. And he's got a couple of years to do it and he's gonna. Anyway, final thoughts on this?
No, absolutely. Yeah, you said it perfectly. He's setting the stage for the Republicans to steal the next elections. And you know, like it's something we unfortunately just need to keep talking about. And it's depressing and demoralizing that like something like this can be debated, but we have to keep talking about it. We have to keep just pushing the truth. It's so simple and difficult, but the consequences of this whole thing are just really getting into place.
Agreed. Well, unfortunately, that is gonna have to be the end of our first hour, but don't go anywhere. Assuming you're on YouTube or on Twitch, we will have more for you. And it gets even crazier with Rudy Giuliani and Nazis in the streets and all that. If you're on our linear platforms, thank you for watching though. We're gonna take a short break and we'll be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.